You're listening to Fascinating Women with Mark Laurie. And now, Mark Laurie.
Well, hello, everyone. Today I have Virginia, and I've never quite mastered how to pronounce your last name, Virginia.
Okay, well, you're from Canada, which means you have these animals around you. You know what a moose is, right?
Yep, got a moose.
Now picture one skiing.
A moose
skis. Moose skis.
Moose skis.
A moose skis across the tundra.
That is wonderful. I've never thought of it that way. That is really cool. That's cool. Well, yeah. I've known Virginia for about, come up a year now, I guess.
About that, yeah.
Yeah, and she, I would call her a force of nature with her positive vision of how the world should, not so much work, but how people's potential should be squandered.
Amen.
And she's an amazing storyteller. That was the first thing that that captured me was we're at this meeting and some things got mixed up. And she said, everyone, we go up to this room. And so we're all trapped up there. And she mesmerized us with this amazing story. And I thought, I got to know this lady. This is really a cool lady. And my instincts were proven right. She is amazing. She's got more depth to her. You've been trained as an educator?
Yes, that's my first love is definitely education. I started educating stuffed animals when I was five.
Mm-hmm. How did that go?
It was great. I had the smartest teddy bears in New Jersey, in the whole state. Like they won major awards for alphabet and counting.
Alphabet and counting. That is impressive. Mm-hmm.
And I drew the awards too, because as you can met, like I am a bit of a diva, right? So I like people. So I would be like, oh, Teddy, congratulations. You're the best speller. And I would make like little certificates and yeah.
I just love that. That is like so unique. That's perfect. So when you were a child, let's go back to that. Do they say that the things when you're around 5 years old is what shapes your life? What kind of events put you on the course to where you are now back when you were a kid, 5, 6 years old?
Wow, that's a really deep question when you're talking to somebody like me. Do you really want to go there?
Short
version. Listen, I've done a lot of therapy, Mark, a lot of therapy. And my sort of one of my earliest childhood memories is of feeling lonely.
Right.
Of being the kid that was just sort of not fitting in. I have a brother who is about 7 years older than I am, and he taught me how to read almost before I could speak. So I've been reading. I was a reader, a competent reader by the time I was like three. So by the time you get to kindergarten and you're able to read, not really comprehend the content of, but actually read the words of like Judy Blume novels, right? Yeah. I was just like too smart for my britches. And I did, you know, you're your whole world. So I just didn't understand like, what is wrong with these people that they can't do these things. And which was why I played school, because they needed to be educated.
Okay.
Like I needed to help them.
Right.
So I suppose that was kind of about fulfilling potential, but really one of my earliest memories is seeking attention, wanting my mother's attention. Right. My dad worked a lot. He was an entrepreneur and he built a business from scratch. So he worked 20-hour days, came home, slept on a chair and went back to work and left my mom to kind of fend with us. And she was the bookkeeper. And so my earliest memory is of her with her back, sort of sitting in a corner with her back to the kitchen and me sitting on the floor playing Barbies, saying, mommy, mommy, play with me. And she would say like, you can play by yourself, honey. Mommy's got work to do. And so I think I really had to learn to, one, entertain myself. Right. I needed to be creative with what we had. We weren't exactly rolling in dough when I was a kid. So I had to be creative with what I had. And I had to tell myself good stories. So we lived on 12 acres. There was some woods in the back of the house and there was this sort of creek that had formed and I would go out there and play on Fairy Island, you know? And so I had all these stories and really it was a function of being alone a lot.
Anything else positive come out? You're entertaining yourself. You have a need to teach people.
I think my ability to tell stories, I've always been driven to outcomes as well. So I've, even from a very young age, if we were fundraising, I was the number one fundraiser. If there was a food pantry that put out a call for canned food, I'm 9 years old doing the canned food drive. that sort of thing. And then I was heavily involved. I don't know if everybody knows what some of this stuff is. So if you're like, what is that? Just ask. But do you know what 4-H is?
Yeah, we have them up here.
Hands, heart, head, health, that whole thing. Yep. So I started in 4-H when I was 9. Mm-hmm. And I think that really shaped me as well, because there were sort of, you know, projects and competitions and goal setting and doing things properly and having processes and systems like that. I sewed. So I was in the home ec department. We didn't actually raise any chickens or anything. But the point was, you know, was someone was going to review your work and they were going to give you feedback and you were going to get better. Mm-hmm. So that's just an early, early time in my life of being coached. Mm-hmm. And then as you know, you finish level one, then you become responsible for all the level one people, and then you coach them on how to do the things that you've learned how to do. So I think that's a bit, coaching people on a process and on getting an outcome. It probably started way yeah. back when I was 9 or 10, when I started in 4-H.
That gives you the base, because you're so polished at these systems and so clear about them now. And in some cases, I still struggle with, like, I'm still the artist. So I land on stuff like spontaneous, and I work, that's the come Jan, I work well. I have like on the Colby scale, about like I'm 1 point from the top of being a quick start. And mm-hmm. then the frustration part at the bottom, the fact finder is like a one. So the two of them combined, I have a complete stack. Jan's the reverse of me.
Nice. It's always good to have someone in your camp that can shore up your weaknesses. I don't know about the being married to the polar opposite thing. Vic and I have the same thing going on. It's not always easy.
Well, that part of our relationship, it blends together, because we discover how to talk to each other. We just had this just past 45 years of marriage. This is a big year. I got 45 years of marriage.
Wow.
40 years of my company. I've got my photographs in our space been up there for 36 years. There's all sorts of different things that kind of add up into it. So where do you find the meaning for your life?
In service.
In service?
In service. I think a lot of times people think about being in service as, you know, being the person that is serving in the soup kitchen or like yeah. there are different ways, right? So I more identify myself with the women in purple who sponsored Jesus's ministry.
Okay.
So if you go back as far as Jesus of Nazareth, you know, he disappears for like 18 years and who knows what he's doing. I think he was like learning Buddhism and some stuff. He was learning some philosophy, right? And when he came back to do his ministry, if you look at it, the man never had a job. He was like, I think I'll be a life coach and a public speaker, right? And he never got paid for it, but he always had sandals. He always had robes. Yeah. He was cleaned. He was fed. He had a roof over his head. And let's grant it that in biblical times, the Jews were fairly cut out of the buy and sell, right? It was, you had to pay your taxes, but you actually didn't get to participate in the economy in any meaningful way. So it was really all about that community piece. And so when I look at that, there were these women in purple, and they were the women merchants, and they funded that ministry. And so for me, service is really about taking your surplus talent, the things that you do that do not strain or stress you. It's sort of like you, Mark, you know, you can take a subject, a woman, and say, effortlessly, I'm going to create this masterpiece, where for somebody like me, it would be baffling. It would be a struggle for me to do that, because that's not my area of genius, right? So serving and ministry and that is about taking your talent and your superpower and laying it over, using it as an overlay to solve a weakness or a gap or a lack or a scarcity in something or someone else.
Right.
So for me, what really gives me purpose, and this has been for a really long time. I've been very fortunate. Even at our most poor, I had 3 square meals a day and I had a roof over my head. I had clean clothes to wear. I had a bed to lay my head on. Right. So even at our most poor, granted, we were eating squirrels, groundhogs, and other yucky meat, but there was just meat in my house. Like we didn't have names for the meat, like beef and pork and chicken. It was like meat. Okay. So, but I always ate, right? Mm-hmm. So for me, what breaks my heart is the abject cruelty of some humans to others, and how some humans never get a chance to thrive because of the accident of their birth. Mm-hmm. So my passion is ending poverty through entrepreneurship.
Right.
And I'm just a big advocate, and I'm a big supporter. So I'm on the board of a charity called 10 by 3, and we support women and men artisans in third world countries, and we import their artisan goods here and pay them more than fair trade, usually somewhere between 2 and 5 times fair trade. Mm-hmm. We send out business coaches, teach them how to build more businesses. And right now, believe it or not, this is what's really cool. So we've got this COVID thing going on, right? Correct?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, the weavers can't weave because they can't get together in the community to do the weaving. And that's not something you do by yourself. It's a communal thing. And we can't go get the baskets even if they were weaving. So like the whole weaving thing gone. However, the men and women that we've graduated out of poverty are hiring our weavers in their other businesses that they've built because they graduated from our program, and the villages are sustaining.
Now, these aren't in North America. They're in Africa?
They're Uganda, Ghana, Bangladesh, Togo. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, but for me, when I was on the board call on Wednesday, and I was just, we've created communities that have an economy of scale when before there was just dust. Yeah. So I'm all about that. I also support an organization called Made for Freedom. Mm-hmm. And that is a brainchild of these are all social enterprises, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. That was a brainchild of a gal who went to Thailand and saw the human trafficking. And what starts to happen is you rescue all these women, and you know what they do? They go back to their pimps because they were stolen when they were 7 or 8 or 9, and they've been conditioned for this service, this sexual service, servitude. They don't know how to do anything. They can't write. They can't read. They don't even know their name half the time. They don't know how to brush their teeth. They have no living skills. So
save them. Like rescue them is a bump in the road.
Well, rescuing them is pointless.
Yeah.
If you rescue them, then you have to put them into a rehabilitation program. And there are very few rehabilitation programs. So when you shop at Made for Freedom, right, your purchase covers rehabilitating girls, young women that mm-hmm. have been rescued from human trafficking. I do Kiva lending. I mean, it's just that sort of stuff I'm really driven for, because I'm an entrepreneur and I know that anytime I don't have money, I think to myself, how could I sell something? What could I create a value in the world that somebody would want to give me some money for?
Yep, that works. We have some friends of ours, very wealthy characters, and they have a game. They're based out here, and they fly down on one of their jets to the far end of the country, and it's in the Maritimes. They get off after they give up their wallets and their phones. And it's a race to who can get back to Calgary or Edmonton first. And they can't use their name. They can't use their contacts. They have to find resources to pay their way to come back here.
Mm-hmm.
And that just keeps things real for them, because they're in this whole plushy job. But their name means nothing. Their bank account means nothing. They're just a guy in the street trying to get to Calgary.
Yeah. I mean, I think we forget. And right now, as we're recording this, the whole world practically is on some form or measure of lockdown.
Yeah.
And figuring it out, right? Just really being able to figure that out. I came up with a great one. I'll just put it out here. So anybody who's a travel agent that okay. is like, I can't make any money right now, they can book. They're like, I'm booking destination weddings for 2021. And I said, what if we're on lockdown? They said, that can't happen. I said, what if this is it? No, I'm serious. Like, what if this is it? Yeah, what if this is it?
Yeah.
This is how POWs survive in a POW camp, in a camp, right? This is my new normal. This may be it. This is all I got, right? Yeah. So I said, look, what if parents from now on have to homeschool their children again? And it's driving people crazy. What's something third through fifth graders need to do that has to do with travel? geography. So what if you did a series, right, where you could say like, oh, we're going to travel to Greece. And you just did like a little video tour, like a little slideshow tour of, and this is the Parthenon, and this is about this and that, and here are what they export, and here's what they import. And I mean, it's not hard. It's fourth grade geography. Okay. So wait for it. So this is what I love. Now think about the brilliant part of this. So you're creating this travel. Now you and I are in BNI, right?
Right.
So BNI is a global organization. So how hard is it to be like, we're going to go to Greece and look, I have a real Greek on the phone for you. Hey, Stavros, how are you today?
Huge.
Right?
That's right. Right.
So you do that. So then you record it and it's intellectual property, which means now I can sell it as a program, but wait for it. All of those families are paying you, let's just say a membership subscription of $47 a month for the kids travel program, right? Okay. Whenever we can travel, they're also going to be your clients.
Yeah.
Because you have been in their home talking to their kids every week for the next 20 weeks.
No, you love you, trust you.
No one has taken me up on it. Don't you think that's smart? See, that's the kind of stuff that jazzes me. But that's, for me, it's all about what do you have that you could use to make something else that somebody would want or could use right now. Mm-hmm. So that's me.
What's the biggest thing you've done? The one that people go, wow, I can't believe you did that. That is huge.
I raised two amazing children.
That's big.
I birthed them without any epidural. So that was the big one. And then I didn't kill them in the span of 25 years.
That is huge as well.
I'm seriously proud of them. My oldest daughter, Nicole, works for us and she is my heart and she really, she has a level of emotional intelligence that most people our age haven't figured out yet. So she's very, very emotionally intelligent, super grounded, sets effortless boundaries that you just don't cross. And she doesn't have to defend them or anything. They're just there. And she's like, oh, boundary. People are like, I'm sorry. My youngest is 23. Right. She is a dog groomer and she is my greatest teacher. So she is my teacher. Yeah. It's like, mom, I'm going to make every risky mistake in the book. So think of everything that a parent would never want their child to do. Like
She's going to do everything.
And so, but at 23, she's lived more life than most people ever will in a lifetime. She has seen more struggle and more pain. I mean, she's done drugs. She's been held up at gunpoint. Just insanity, right? And so she's working in a pet store chain in their grooming place. So this COVID thing hit and they shut her down. So she contacts the local authorities and says, so is mobile grooming like okay? And they were like, yeah, you can do that. You just have to, you know, they gave her these parameters. She's like, okay. So she opened up her mobile grooming business. She has business cards, brochures, found a lead source, and is making more money now than she was before COVID. I mean, she's her mother's daughter, right? Like hilarious. But the point is she's had a lot to learn, but she's also taught me a whole lot as well. So I think
what's a couple of lessons that she's taught you that you sit back and go, wow, I would not have grown that without you.
One is what it means to fierce love. Mm-hmm. What does fierce love look like? So some people think like tiger mama love is sort of about smothering your kids and dragging them along and telling them they're gonna and whatever. And what I've had to learn is the most courageous part of parenting is being able to stand firm and watch them choose to hurt themselves and then say, I trust you to clean that up.
Wow.
I trust you. Because otherwise you end up in codependence. And I am the adult child of two alcoholic parents. I literally went to a therapist and I said, I have a problem. And he said, what? I said, well, my daughter's making some bad decisions, whatever, whatever. And by the way, I do have permission to share this about her from her. Right. So I'm not divulging her personal life. She's like, if you need to tell it and it helps people, have at it. So she's very healed at this point. So the therapist said, well, you know, we really need to have your daughter. I go, no, that's not the problem. I said, the only skill set I have to deal with this is codependence. And I know that's not good. Like, that's not going to work.
Right.
Right. Like that's, but that's the only skill set that I know is clean, you know, is make it easier. Right. Clean the house. Cause mommy didn't make the dinner. Cause daddy couldn't, right. Like whatever it was, like, that's what I learned how to do. And so, that I think was probably a really big positive as well, because I have, for the most part, I can't say I'm 100%, but I have an awareness of when I'm playing the hero, where I'm swooping in and trying to like save uninvited. And I also am more aware when people are playing the victim role, but they don't really need to. Like, they have it in them. They have everything that they need, all the tools, all the courage, all the everything. It's sort of like the Dorothy, right? Click your heels together. There's no place like home. You had that in you all the time. And so some people do need help, right? They, if you have no hands, tying your shoes kind of is a help.
Yeah.
But if you have two hands, you can tie your shoes, figure it out.
That's right.
So I've learned sort of when help is help and when it's butting in.
Is that a hard lesson to learn?
It was for me.
Yeah.
Sure. I mean, when you have a whole history of, you know, bullying and being bullied and rescuing and playing the villain and being the victim and like all that crazy stuff is there. And I have a belief too about all this kind of programming that just runs in the background, because we come as a blank slate and then our experiences program our reality into us. And I don't think I can ever like get past the programming, or I'm going to fix my mindset. Like, my mindset's not broken, it's programmed. So the question is which program are you running when you are making the decision? And it's really about not using that program for good decision making. So as long as you know, like, oh, that program is for the bad decision making.
Most people don't take the time to learn which programs they're riding on.
It's challenging. You know, we all, I teach a that Goals That Matter class, right? Yeah. And for some people that paradigm about want it, but don't want it, but you should want it, but you shouldn't want it, don't want it, you're bad, you want it, right? Like that thing, most people have told me that's the most valuable day, is the greedy day. They're like, I never understood. Well,
I can have that.
Right? Don't want that. Children are starving in Africa. You know, you want it. Oh, you greedy bastard. Don't pay your fair share, bastard. Right? Like, so
yeah, the demons inside your head. They're
and the programming, if you really look at it, and however you want to, we were joking around before about like, don't get me started on the deep state, right? I don't, whatever you want to call it, right? Whatever it is that when we get on this planet in this material version of ourselves, three-dimensional version of ourselves. There are forces that keep us, that hold us from being the limitless, powerful beings that we are, right? And so all of that programming is part of that. And however you want to look at what is life, Robert Feinstein thinks that we're all actually holographic projections of ourselves because heaven is boring. Right. And so we're here to pick up the power pills. And so every time you discover a programming, that's like, it's a power pill that makes you more of yourself and less of the limited being and makes you a more limitless being. His theories are kind of problematic for me too, but again, it's just however you're programmed, the awareness of those programs and the double binds that they put you in, the way you interpret things or the meanings that you give things, they really do determine your joy, the spirit of joy that is within you each and every day. And my friend Scott Conway says, look, there's pleasure, happiness, and joy. Mm-hmm. Okay. Pleasure is, this cheesecake tastes so good. Right?
Right.
Happiness is, yippee, I get to eat cheesecake. Or, wow, that cheesecake was so awesome. Okay. Happiness.
Happiness.
Joy is, isn't it cool that cheesecake even exists? Like, who thought a cheesecake, man? Like, who put that together? How did they think of that? That is so cool. Right?
Yeah.
That's joy. You don't have to have it. You don't have to taste it.
Just appreciate it.
Existence. You just have to be like, that's cool. Who thought of that? And so our limited fashion, what we do is we do this. Oh, that cheesecake tastes so good, but now my butt is like 22 inches bigger. I should have never eaten that cheesecake. And then happiness is like, somebody should be to blame for making, you shouldn't have let me eat that cheesecake, Mark. And then the opposite of joy is, who invented that stuff anyway? They've, now I'm a fat cow. And it's all the cheesecake manufacturer's fault. The person who discovered cheesecake should be shot, right? That's the program. That's the other program. So which one do you want to choose? Because you know what? Cheesecake doesn't do anything but sit on the plate.
Yeah, this is, I'm here. Take me the way you want.
Or mold if we keep it out of the fridge, right? It has its own physical properties and it just sits on a plate and does what it does. It has absolutely no particular meaning, good or bad. Yeah. It really is all subscribed to which program we run it through.
I came across a quote that way and a person said, any situation, any item, anything has no power until you assign it something. When you sit back and go, okay, so this is what you are. You're a bad thing. You're a dangerous thing. You're a threatening thing. You're a good thing. You give it power. And you can also take that power away. But most people don't seem to realize that. They just respond to what they think things are, not realize that they're labeling it and therefore, and then taking action against it.
And the reality is, so from sort of a Freudian, Lacanian perspective, the way that we start to understand the world is that we know that mommy is mommy because she's not daddy. So we don't really understand mommy. We understand not daddy, different, not daddy, right? Yeah. We understand ourselves as I am Virginia. I am not Mark. I am not Victor. I am not Megan. I am not brunette. I am blonde, right?
Yeah.
And what we claim as what we are or are not starts to shape the reality in our world.
Yeah.
And then we spend our lives pointing out, like, now you've trained your reticular activation system to think a thing, to look for a thing. Yeah. And so everywhere you go, you see the confirmation of your original bias that was formed before you had language.
Yeah. Okay.
And so you have this confirmation bias and you just keep getting the feedback that you see, that you give the meaning that you give it, because that was at the very beginning, however you did it. And then at the end of the day, then we start getting into binary conversations where I'm right about cheesecake and you're wrong about cheesecake.
Because of our perceptions of the past.
Right. But cheesecake literally does me physical harm. My daughter does too. My daughter's like, Mom, I'm so dumb. I should have listened to you. I had ice cream last night and now I'm practically going to the emergency room. I said, well, then, that $1.99 bunny sundae costs you $3,000 emergency room visit every time you do it. So it's not a $2 ice cream. It's a $3,000 ice cream.
Yep. Appreciate it for what it is. That is well. So what would be the resources that have helped you along your way? And you sit back and say, this is the toolkit that I've assembled the very beginning ones.
I really believe most of my toolkits have come out of mentors, come through mentorship. So I would say I am an avid reader and I consider those authors to be my mentors as well. Really funny. I don't actually listen to very many podcasts, but I enjoy running my podcast because then I find fascinating people. I'm letting the secret out. Like, I'm letting my cat out of the bag, right? I meet people and I go, ooh, you're so smart. I'd love to have you on my podcast. And then I ask them a bunch of questions and I learn a bunch of stuff that I wanted to learn from them. Like, basically, I get hours and hours of coaching in exchange for promoting them, right?
That's right.
So you don't need money. You don't only need money. So I think in the form of mentorship. So I've had some really good, solid mentors. My dad, for as problematic as our relationship had been when I was younger, was a solid mentor for me. I had a mentor in high school, Al Kovacs. He was a chemistry teacher. And at the time that I met him, I actually had an eating disorder, and he saved my life by not allowing me to starve to death. Mm-hmm. And he was a really huge mentor and factor in my life. Bob Russell was a professor in college who was an invaluable mentor. So I just had a lot of them along the way. And I feel like that's really where, when you find somebody that you can mesh with, who can speak the truth of you in love in a way that you can hear it, it opens you to all the possibilities of what you could be. So I most appreciate right now in my life, there are just a few mentors. Jay Fassett is one of them, which is how we met, who looks at me and says, do you not know? Do you not know? I'm like, do I not know what? He's like, do you not know the greatness in you? And I'm like, but I don't think so. So I think you'll have to show me, right? So I have like, I went on the marketer's cruise. This was the weirdest thing back in end of January, 2020. Right. I went on the marketer's cruise. And so I'm like, la, 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 la. And all of a sudden, like all the big kids are like, come hang with us. So there's like Sage Levine, come hang with us. And Michael Neely and Forbes Riley. I don't know if you know who she is, but QVC, she has sold billions, literally billions with a B, dollars of product on QVC. Forbes Riley. Okay. Iman, a guy, like, they're just like, come hang with us. You're really cool. Come out. And I'm like, I told Jay, I think I'm wetting my pants a little bit. And he's like, why? And I'm like, cause I feel like I'm an eighth grader and the high schoolers just invited me to come like hang.
That is so cool.
I don't get it. Right. So I think that's the deal. When you have mentors that see who you could be and then offer you and invite you to explore that and help you and extend a hand.
Yeah.
You know, that for me is the place of the greatest expansion is through human connection.
Yeah. I remember one of the, he's a high grade 12 teacher, and started off telling me pretty good. He sat down at the corner of his desk. He had this sweater on, and I remember at the time I thought this is different. And he says, you know, by the time you hit here, you know all there is to need to know about English. He says, you all know it. And everyone says, yeah, so I'm not going to teach you anything. And I'm kind of going, that's a trap. This does not sound good. Everyone's like, oh, good. He's not going to teach us nothing. And then he says, so what we're going to do instead is we're going to have to bring it out of you because you may not know what you know. I'm going, that sounds like way more work.
That sounds a little scary.
Yeah, it was. And that was such a calm thing. It was like, we're going to bring it out of you. How'd you like being surrounded by entrepreneurs? Like that cruise is kind of a special cruise.
How did I like what?
Being surrounded on your cruise by all these.
Oh, you know, one of the things, so here's a kryptonite for me. Okay. It's a little bit like there is, and I'll share it because one, I don't want anyone, if you're going to be fascinating, you have to suck too. So that's just part of that.
Yeah.
It really isn't our beauty or our grace or our strength or it's the whole complexity of things. Right. So I enjoyed it. I signed up to go very last minute and I felt really unprepared when I went. So most people will look at me and think like I work a room, right? Like I have it all together, whatever. And it is true, but when I've inserted myself as a person of importance. So when you met me, I had already sort of aligned myself with Jay and had set myself up where I was skating on him. So he was acknowledging me, therefore I was acknowledgeable. So I went on this marketer's cruise and there's like 400 people and Jay was there, but there were 400 people and he wasn't leading the thing. Yeah. So he couldn't shout me out. So I had to like do it all by myself. And that like was nauseating and exhausting for me because I actually am very self-conscious in crowds. I was bullied as a kid. So it creates a lot of anxiety for me, like to walk into the big dining room and they didn't have assigned table seating. Now with assigned table seating, I would have been fine. Right.
Yeah. That's my place over there.
Yeah. Can I sit with you guys? I was like, can I sit with you guys? Like, literally. And people were like, yeah, here's a seat. And I was like, thank you so much for letting me sit with you guys. Because I never got to sit with anybody in the lunchroom. So it was like, it was traumatic as you know what bomb, right? Like, I was like, oh my Lord. So there were all of these sort of really traumatic, triggering things. And I would go back to my cabin in the middle of the day and I'd be like, just on the bed, like, ah. My cabin mate's like, what is wrong with you? And I'm like, you know, because it was just triggering. And then there was this sort of like, there were some people that I kind of wondered why they were there.
Right.
So I was like, okay, do you do anything? Do you sell anything? Do you, like, what do you do? And there were people that couldn't really even articulate, like, this is what I do. And so my tendency is to just be like, ugh, and I can't take it. And right. So I have little judgies about that. So I had to work through that, right? I had to work through, you don't get to judge people. Your job is to be curious about them and to bring out the, like what you do in a photography, right? Like, yeah, to bring out the beautiful business from within them. Exactly. And to understand what they do. Mm-hmm. And so there were some people that really challenged me in that way. There were some people that were really bad networkers. And you know how I feel about that?
Yes, I do.
Selling. Like, that you couldn't have a conversation that they weren't trying to sell you their thing. And I'm like, I'm not buying your stuff. I just want to get to know you as a human being. What'd you have for dinner? So there were all those sorts of challenges. And then there was that I'm not worthy thing. So there was a lot in that. It was 9 days. And it was, and then you're tired, right? And you're discombobulated and you're walking around the boat and you feel like you're in an earthquake all the time. And so, yeah. And then, and I had also just found out that I have a genetic blood disorder and, it's fine. There's all kinds of really cool things you can do. But the number one thing was no animal protein, no meat.
Okay.
Wish they'd have said that when I was 5 eating groundhogs. So I'm just, it's like, it was just fresh. Like, they had just said no meat. Mm-hmm. And so it was very difficult, to deal with that. So I actually, one of my friends was on, and so I just didn't go near the food. They just ordered, I was like, here's order me food. Just whatever. And they caught me on a line one time. And I'm like, I'll just have a burger and fries. And he goes, without the burger. He's standing behind me, without the burger.
Friends looking out for you.
I turn around, I go, dang, I thought I ditched you. It's like, no luck. If I see you heading towards a food bar,
we're here for you.
I'm here for you, baby. Because it really did, it really put me in a lot of pain. It was painful. Yeah. So, I was more challenged in that 9 days than I think I've been challenged in a really long time.
That did you come up with what your goal? Like, did you have a goal when you went into it?
No. Yeah, I did. Wait, I did.
Yeah.
To ride on a boat.
To ride on a boat.
I just wanted to go on. I was like, oh look, a cruise that I can write off as a business expense. Okay, I'm in. I'm like, okay, like, who gets to sit with Alina Vincent, you know, for 4 hours on a beach and just get to know her? You know what I'm saying? It was just, I had no agenda and people were like, oh, we're going to be inking deals. But my system is, here's my system, right? Okay. Just because I met you on a boat does not mean I'm going to ink a deal with you today.
Yep.
So I got a 5-step process and we might get through step 2 on here, but we got more steps to go.
What's your 5-step process?
Meet you.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Then I call it, you know, get acquainted, right? Become an acquaintance, which usually means I know your name and I know what you do and I know the name of your company and I know where you live or where you work. That just basic information. Mm-hmm. Then I move you into, then if we choose to continue, then we move into what I call the association phase. And that's really when I get to know you psychographically. So mm-hmm. an acquaintance, I'm going to get to know you demographically. Mm-hmm. As an associate, I'm going to get to know you psychographically. I'm going to know about your family. I'm going to know about your background. I'm going to know about your friends. I'm going to know this kind of a conversation. I want to know where you came from, right? I want to know.
Yes, like, do you have a file folder of all these things for each person you've met, or is this in your head?
I keep notes in a CRM. So when I get done, I actually jot them down I jot it down in Evernote, and then I have an assistant who puts it in my CRM for me.
Okay.
And then from there, if we're going to continue on into a business relationship, so that's where the friend relationship, you know, kind of like, that's where kind of like your friends and your people that you associate with on a friendly basis, hang. And then if I'm going to take it further into a business relationship, then, I'm looking to develop, what I would call an advocate relationship, which is where we speak knowledgeably about one another. And if you're going to do it from the BNI standpoint, it's a visibility relationship. I make you more visible to my network. You make me more visible to yours.
Right.
Right. So, and largely like you and I, that's sort of where we are at this point. You know, we're going to trade podcasts, and I'm going to make you visible to my network and talk up your awesome photo, your photography and all that, and make you more visible. Mm-hmm. Right. And that's advocate level. If I want to move you up into a higher level of relationship, then that's what I'm going to be what I would call it's a credibility moment. And that is moving you into what I call an ambassador role. And ambassadors traditionally, right, they are the person that represents you in a foreign land. So this is, I represent you in a foreign network. Mm-hmm. So this is where I go and I'm out networking and I'm thinking about Mark Lurie. I walk into that chamber meeting and I'm thinking Mark Lurie said he's looking to meet these kinds of people. Mark Lurie wants to meet the coordinators and directors of women's networking groups. Mm-hmm. Right?
Right.
So I'm going to go to those groups and I'm going to meet those people and I'm going to say, hey, I got somebody I really would love for you to meet. Right? So that's bringing you in to a foreign network that you wouldn't necessarily be able to penetrate yourself. And then at the affiliated level, that's when we're finding each other clients.
Right.
So when you're on a marketer's cruise, they want to go straight to give me clients.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that's like saying, come to my cabin and see my etchings.
Yeah.
and you know, networking is a lot like dating. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the worst guys out on the circuit are the ones that are like, hi, I'll buy you dinner. And then we're going to go home and do it. Right. Like, they're like, hi, want to do it? You're like, no, who are you? What? Right. And that's really when people go in for the bring me clients or buy my product, right? When they go in for the kill before they've developed those other, before they've warmed you up and gotten to know you and learned how to be reciprocal in that space.
That's really cool. Well, we're running out of time. I could talk for you for days on end.
Well, we'll just have to do it again.
We'll have to do it again. It's been just incredible for it. So I've been sitting here with Virginia. We'll have some details at in the write-up section below. She is an amazing lady. And actually, she's kind of subdued today, if you can believe that. Her energy level is, it's on a whole different plane when she gets into her programming.
Just when I'm talking conspiracy theory and deep state, that's when you're going to see it, Mark Lurie.
Well, thank you so much for coming on. It has been fascinating.
This has been Fascinating Women with Mark Lurie. Join us on our website and subscribe at fascinatingwomen.ca. Fascinating Women has been sponsored by Inner Spirit Photography of Calgary, Alberta, and is produced in Calgary by Lee Ellis and My Office Media.